Hey, future nurses, getting ready to tackle those respiratory conditions.
You bet. We're diving deep today, helping you sort through all that info about asthma, bronchiectasis, COPD, cystic fibrosis, and even status asthmaticus.
Sometimes it feels like drinking from a fire hose, right?
Absolutely. But no worries, we're here to make it manageable, focusing on what matters most for you at the bedside.
Okay, so let's jump right in. Asthma. I remember it always being called the shapeshifter.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
One minute a patient's fine, the next they're struggling to breathe.
Yeah.
What's going on in those airways to cause such a sudden change?
Well, picture this. You're driving down the highway, everything's smooth sailing, then bam, massive traffic jam.
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
That's kind of what happens in the airways during an asthma attack. Inflammation triggers this chain reaction, yeah. So those smooth muscles around the bronchi, they constrict, the airway lining swells up, and mucus. Well, mucus starts piling up like crazy, making it tough to breathe.
Okay, so it's like a sudden roadblock in the lungs.
Mm.
But the good news is asthma is reversible.
Exactly.
What does that actually mean for us as nurses when we're caring for these patients?
It means we've got the power to reopen those airways and get things flowing smoothly again. Think of albuterol, those rescue inhalers. They work fast, like sending in a tow truck to clear the highway.
So quick relief is key during an attack. Got it. But what about preventing those attacks in the first place?
Ah, good question.
I remember learning about inhaled corticosteroids. They're not just for putting out fires, right?
Yeah, exactly. Think of those inhaled corticosteroids as the traffic controllers. They're working behind the scenes, long-term, you know, preventing those airway jams from even happening. They help reduce that inflammation and something we call airway remodeling, which is basically long-term damage. And that damage can make asthma less reversible over time.
Makes sense. Less inflammation, less chance of those airways going haywire. And to help patients stay on track, we've got the asthma action plan, but honestly, it was a bit confusing when I was a student. All those zones and colors. How can we make this roadmap easier for patients to understand, especially those who are anxious about their condition?
Yeah, it can be overwhelming at first, for sure. But that's where our teaching skills come in, right? Break it down for them step by step, explain what each zone means, how to use a peep flow meter, all that.
Right, right.
But most importantly, connect good asthma control to the things they value. Maybe it's sleeping through the night without coughing or having enough energy to play with their kids.
I love that. Connecting it to their personal goals.
Good.
Okay, we've tackled the unpredictable world of asthma. Now let's move on to a condition that's a bit more of a long-term challenge. Bronchiectasis. And the key difference here seems to be irreversible damage to the airways.
Yeah, exactly.
What actually causes this irreversible damage?
Think of bronchiectasis like the aftermath of a battle in the lungs. Past infections, especially those that weren't fully cleared, underlying conditions like CF or even inhaling harmful stuff, it can all leave scars on those airways.
So those airways are like delicate tree branches that get permanently damaged.
Exactly. Imagine those branches becoming all floppy and stretched out. They lose their elasticity. And because they're dilated, mucus has a hard time clearing out, making it a breeding ground for bacteria.
So that explains the chronic cough and all that phlegm, right?
Exactly. You'll often see thick and discolored phlegm with bronchiectasis.
Okay, so if we're assessing a patient, what are some red flags in their history that might make us think bronchiectasis?
Well, keep an ear out for that persistent productive cough. We're talking months or even years of coughing up phlegm, especially if it's that thick yellow or green kind. It's a telltale sign those airways are struggling to stay clear.
And then there's the classic sign finger clubbing. It always makes me think of little drumsticks.
You're right on the money. Finger clubbing means the body's not getting enough oxygen, chronic hypoxia. In bronchiectasis, those clogged airways make it hard for oxygen to reach the bloodstream, and the body tries to compensate by increasing blood flow to the fingertips.
Wow, that's a powerful image.
Yeah.
So, in this mucus battleground, as you called it, what's our top priority as nurses?
Airway clearance is king. Think chest physiotherapy, teaching effective coughing techniques, and using medications to thin that mucus. It's all about teamwork, us and the patient working together to break up that mucus and get those airways as clear as possible.
Okay, so it's all hands on deck. Now, before we jump to COPD, how do we tell bronchiectasis apart from asthma, especially early on when the symptoms might seem pretty similar?
Great question. Remember that reversibility we talked about with asthma? Well, with bronchiectasis, the damage is often permanent. Those airways won't magically bounce back to their original shape.
Got it. So with bronchiectasis, it's more of a chronic progressive situation with less of that bounce back ability. Okay, let's switch gears to COPD. It's often called a silent thief because it slowly steals a person's ability to breathe. Why is it so tricky to catch early on, especially in a busy clinical setting where we might not have a ton of time with each patient?
Well, COPD is sneaky. It often progresses so gradually that people might just dismiss their symptoms, especially if they're smokers. They might think, oh, it's just a smoker's cough, without realizing the damage happening in their lungs.
So it's about looking beyond that smoker's cough and really digging deeper, right?
Exactly. By the time many folks seek help, there's already been significant damage. That's why we as nurses have to be super vigilant, especially when we're assessing patients with a history of smoking or exposure to lung irritants.
Okay, connecting the dots. Now, I remember learning there are two main players in COPD, emphysema and chronic bronchitis. Can you break those down for us? I swear, respiratory conditions have a million terms to remember.
Right.
Absolutely. Let's stick with that tree analogy. In emphysema, imagine those tiny air sacs, the leaves of our tree, getting damaged and losing their ability to expand and contract properly.
What are you saying?
They become stiff and deflated, making it way harder to exchange oxygen and carbon dioxide.
So emphysema is all about those tiny air sacs losing their elasticity.
Hmm.
What about chronic bronchitis? Where does that fit in?
Chronic bronchitis is all about the airways, those branches of our tree. They get inflamed and clogged with mucus, making it tough for air to flow freely, like a constant traffic jam in the lungs.
Okay, two different processes, but both leading to breathing problems.
Yeah.
This is where it gets tricky for me. Both COPD and asthma involve difficulty breathing. How can we as nursing students really nail down the difference?
You've hit on a common point of confusion for sure. Remember that key concept of reversibility with asthma? Well, with COPD, the damage is more persistent and progressive. While treatment can help, those airways and air sacs won't just magically go back to their original state.
So even with NEDs, those lungs aren't fully bouncing back. And of course, everyone knows smoking is like public enemy number one when it comes to COPD. But are there other risk factors we should be watching for? Things patients might not even realize are putting their lungs at risk.
Absolutely. Beyond smoking, think about occupational exposures. People working around dust, chemicals, or fumes, even if they don't smoke, they're at higher risk.
It's like their workplace is slowly damaging their lung health day after day. What about air pollution? I know that's a big concern these days.
You're right. Air pollution is a growing problem, both indoors and outdoors. It's not just about those big smog alerts. Even low levels can contribute to lung damage over time. And then there's the genetic wild card, alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency.
Wait, genetic? So you could be predisposed to COPD even without smoking or environmental factors.
Exactly. Alpha-1 antitrypsin is a protein that protects the lungs. People with this deficiency lack that shield, making them much more vulnerable to developing emphysema, even if they've never touched a cigarette.
Wow, that's incredible. Really highlights how complex COPD can be and how important a thorough patient assessment is. Now let's shift gears a bit and talk about the impact of COPD on a patient's life beyond just breathing. I imagine it can be pretty debilitating.
Oh, absolutely. It's not just about shortness of breath. COPD can affect every aspect of a person's life. Imagine struggling to climb stairs or even get dressed without feeling winded. It can lead to fatigue, weight loss, trouble sleeping, even anxiety and depression.
It's like a ripple effect impacting their whole well-being. So how can we, as nurses, provide that holistic care, that support that goes beyond just managing their symptoms?
We need to address the whole person, not just the disease. Listen to their concerns, understand their limits, and help them adapt and cope. Pulmonary rehabilitation can be a real game changer for some COPD patients.
Pulmonary rehab, I remember hearing about it, but to be honest, it always sounded a bit vague to me. What does it actually involve?
It's a multidisciplinary program that combines exercise, education, and support, all aimed at helping patients manage their COPD and improve their quality of life. Think of it like physical therapy for the lungs.
So it's about strengthening those lungs, helping them work better. What else does it involve?
It's tailored to each patient, but generally you've got breathing exercises like diaphragmatic breathing and pursed lip breathing to improve lung function. Then there's exercise training to build strength and endurance, which can help them conserve energy and reduce shortness of breath.
So it's not just about breathing exercises, it's about overall strength and stamina.
Exactly. And there's a big educational component. Patients learn about their condition, managing meds, strategies to prevent those flare-ups, and maybe just as important is that social and emotional support they get from connecting with others going through similar challenges.
It sounds like a fantastic example of that whole person approach. Now, before we move on to cystic fibrosis, are there any specific nursing interventions that can make a real difference for COPD patients, especially those who are hospitalized with an exacerbation.
Absolutely. Optimizing their oxygenation is key. That might involve supplemental oxygen therapy, positioning them upright to help them breathe easier, and monitoring their oxygen saturation levels closely.
So oxygen and positioning are crucial. What about medications? I remember learning about bronchodilators and inhaled corticosteroids. Do those play a role in managing those exacerbations?
Absolutely. Bronchodilators like albuterol and ipratropium are often given via nebulizer for faster relief. They relax the muscles around the airways, helping to open them up and improve airflow.
So, like sending in the rescue squad to clear the blockage. What about those inhaled corticosteroids? I thought those were more for long-term management, not acute situations.
They are often used for maintenance, you're right, but they can be helpful during exacerbations too, especially for patients with lots of airway inflammation. They help to calm things down and reduce swelling.
Okay, so bronchodilators to open things up and corticosteroids to tackle the inflammation. Any other meds we might use for a COPD exacerbation?
It depends on the severity and what caused it, but we might consider antibiotics if we suspect a bacterial infection. Sometimes a short course of oral corticosteroids might be needed to really knock down that inflammation.
So it's about tailoring the treatment to each patient. Now, before we move on to cystic fibrosis, I want to touch on something that's often overlooked, the emotional and psychological impact of living with a chronic respiratory condition like COPD.
It's a really important point. It's not just the physical stuff. COPD can take a toll on their emotional well-being, too. They might feel anxious about their breathing, frustrated with their limitations, or isolated from social activities they used to enjoy.
It's like their world shrinks as their breathing gets harder. So
yeah.
How can we provide that emotional support, that listening ear?
Sometimes the most powerful thing is just being present and acknowledging their struggles. Let them know you see their frustration, their fear, their sadness. Validate their feelings and reassure them that they're not alone.
It's about that human connection, that empathy. Okay, let's move on to cystic fibrosis now. As we mentioned before, it's way more than just a respiratory disease.
Cystic fibrosis, or CF, is a genetic condition that can affect multiple organs, but the lungs definitely take the biggest hit. It's caused by a mutation in the CFTR gene, which messes up the movement of salt and water in and out of cells.
And this causes problems because?
Well, it leads to the production of this thick, sticky mucus that clogs up the airways, the pancreas, and other organs.
So it's like their body is producing this super glue that causes problems everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. Imagine trying to breathe through airways that are constantly filled with that thick, sticky mucus. It leads to chronic coughing, frequent lung infections, and eventually irreversible lung damage.
I remember learning about CF in nursing school and feeling totally overwhelmed by it. Where do we even begin as nurses when we're caring for someone with CF?
Airway clearance, just like with bronchiectasis, is a top priority. We use different techniques to help get that thick mucus out. Things like chest physiotherapy, postural drainage, breathing exercises, and even specialized devices like flutter valves.
It sounds like a constant battle.
It is, but it's crucial for preventing infections and preserving lung function. And luckily, we've got some really powerful tools these days, like those CFTR modulator medications.
I've heard those CFTR modulators are a game changer. Tell us more about how they work and what kind of impact they're having.
CFTR modulators are a new type of drug that targets the underlying genetic defect in CF. They work by helping the faulty CFTR protein function better, which helps to thin the mucus and makes it easier to clear out.
So it's like going in and fixing the problem at the source. Are they a cure for CF?
Not a cure, no, but they're a huge step forward in CF treatment. They've led to some really amazing improvements in lung function for a lot of patients, fewer hospitalizations, and even a longer life expectancy. It's an exciting time for CF research.
That gives so much hope to patients and their families. Even with these new meds, am I right in thinking that airway clearance is still super important for managing CF?
You are absolutely right. CFTR modulators are a game changer, but they don't totally eliminate the need for those airway clearance techniques. It's still a crucial part of daily life for people with CF to prevent infections and keep those lungs healthy.
So it's about combining those new medications with the tried and true techniques for a multi-pronged approach. Now, let's not forget that thick mucus can cause problems in other parts of the body too, especially the pancreas.
Yeah.
I remember learning about something called pancreatic insufficiency in CF. Can you explain what that is and how it's managed?
You got it. CF doesn't just target the lungs. That thick mucus can also block the ducts in the pancreas, which prevents digestive enzymes from getting to the intestines. This leads to malabsorption, meaning the body has trouble breaking down and absorbing nutrients from food.
So their digestive system isn't working as efficiently. How do we help with that?
The main treatment is pancreatic enzyme replacement therapy, or PEERT. They take capsules with those missing digestive enzymes with every meal and snack.
Like giving their digestive system a little boost. Any other nutritional considerations for patients with CF?
Since CF makes it harder to absorb nutrients, especially fats, these patients often need a high-calorie, high-fat diet to make sure they're getting enough energy and those essential nutrients.
It sounds like managing CF is a real team effort, requiring expertise from a lot of different healthcare professionals.
It really does. Doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, dietitians, social workers, psychologists, and of course the patients and their families all play a vital role. It's a multidisciplinary approach because CF poses so many complex physical, emotional, and social challenges.
It's a good reminder that nursing is so much more than just giving meds and doing procedures. It's about advocating for our patients, coordinating their care, and providing that support that considers their whole well-being. Now, let's talk about acute respiratory emergencies. As nurses, we need to be ready for those critical moments when a patient's breathing suddenly takes a turn for the worse.
You're right. Those can't-wait moments are part of respiratory care, and we need to think fast and act decisively to stabilize the patient.
Okay, let's say we've got a patient with COPD who comes in with a sudden increase in shortness of breath, coughing up a lot of phlegm, maybe even a fever. What are our top priorities as nurses?
First things first, assess. We need to get a clear picture of how serious their respiratory distress is. Check those vital signs, oxygen saturation, listen to their lungs. It's all about gathering that info quickly to figure out what interventions we need.
Assessment is key. What happens next? What actions do we need to take?
We need to move quickly to improve their oxygenation and open up those airways. Bronchodilators, usually given via nebulizer for faster action, are a must. We might need supplemental oxygen depending on their oxygen levels.
So bronchodilators and oxygen therapy are top priorities. What about corticosteroids? Are those helpful in a COPD exacerbation?
Corticosteroids can be really helpful, especially if there's a lot of airway inflammation. We might give them orally or even intravenously in an acute situation to bring down the swelling and improve airflow.
So it's about calming down that inflammatory response. And if there's an infection, antibiotics will be needed, right?
You bet. We need to address that infection quickly to prevent further damage and help them recover.
Okay, bronchodilators, oxygen, corticosteroids, and antibiotics, all important weapons in our arsenal.
Yeah.
What about non-invasive ventilation? I remember learning about BiPAP and CPAP, those masks that help patients breathe.
Those can be lifesavers for sure. Non-invasive ventilation can be a huge help without having to intubate. It helps improve oxygen levels and take some of the workload off their lungs.
So less invasive, fewer complications, that's always a win. But sometimes, even with all those interventions, a patient might need more intensive care.
Unfortunately, that's true. If their condition keeps getting worse, even with everything we're doing, they might need to be moved to the ICU. They'll need closer monitoring and more aggressive treatment, maybe even mechanical ventilation. It's a tough call, but sometimes it's the only way to save them.
It's a big responsibility, but that's part of nursing. We're there for them no matter what, advocating and providing the best care possible, especially in those critical moments. Now, before we wrap up, I want to talk about patient education. As nurses, we're not just caregivers, we're educators, empowering our patients to take charge of their own health.
Absolutely. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to managing chronic respiratory problems.
What are the key things we should be teaching our patients about COPD, bronchiectasis, and other respiratory conditions? What information really make a difference for them?
It's all about giving them the tools and knowledge they need to manage things themselves. We need to teach them about their specific diagnosis, how their meds work, and how to spot those early warning signs of a flare-up.
So being proactive, recognizing those subtle changes before things get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Don't forget about those lifestyle changes. Smoking cessation is super important, of course, but we should also encourage regular exercise, even if it's just a short walk each day. Good nutrition is essential too, especially for patients with CF who need those extra calories. And hand hygiene, we can't stress that enough.
All those healthy habits that benefit everyone, but especially crucial for people with breathing problems. Okay, let's focus on a specific respiratory emergency status asthmaticus. I remember learning about it in nursing school, and it always had that sense of urgency. This is serious stuff.
It is serious. Status asthmaticus is a medical emergency. It requires fast action. It's basically an asthma attack that just spirals out of control and doesn't respond to the usual treatments.
So those airways are basically locked down no matter what we do. How can we as nurses recognize that a patient is in status asthmaticus? What are the red flags?
You'll see those signs of severe respiratory distress, labored breathing, using those accessory muscles to try and get air, a rapid heart rate, and that look of panic in their eyes. Their oxygen saturation will likely be dropping, even with oxygen.
Sounds terrifying. What do we need to do in those first few minutes?
It's all about the ABCs: airway, breathing, circulation. First, we need to make sure their airway is open. Then, we've got to get those oxygen levels back up with high-flow oxygen. And we need to get those bronchodilators and corticosteroids in there quickly to try and open up those airways and reduce the inflammation.
It's like a race against the clock. Now, thinking about my future as a nurse, how can we advocate for patients who are at risk of developing status asthmaticus? What can we do to help prevent this from happening in the first place?
Education is key. We need to teach them about their early warning signs, the importance of taking their medications as prescribed, and what to do if their symptoms are getting worse, even with their usual treatment. We want them to feel confident and know when to seek help before it becomes life-threatening.
So empowering them to be proactive and to know when to call for help. Okay, we've covered so much today, from COPD to cystic fibrosis and status asthmaticus. Respiratory conditions definitely throw a lot of challenges at nurses.
They do. But remember, as nurses, you've got the knowledge, skills, and compassion to make a real difference.
Absolutely. It's about combining our expertise with that human touch, really connecting with patients and understanding their individual needs. Now, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to touch on something that's often considered a taboo topic in healthcare, death and dying.
You're right, it's something people often avoid talking about. But it's such an important part of providing holistic care, especially for patients with chronic, progressive respiratory conditions.
It's about recognizing that sometimes, no matter how hard we try, the disease might progress, and our focus needs to shift from cure to comfort.
Exactly. And that's where palliative care comes in. It's all about improving quality of life for both the patient and their family when they're facing a serious illness, no matter the prognosis.
So it's not just end-of-life care. It's about support and managing their symptoms throughout their illness, helping them live the best they can for as long as they can.
Absolutely. Palliative care addresses physical, emotional, social, and spiritual needs for both the patient and their loved ones. It's pain and symptom management, but it's also open communication, shared decision-making, and being there for them during a difficult time.
It's acknowledging that death is a natural part of life, and that even with a terminal illness, there's still so much we can do to provide comfort and dignity.
You said it perfectly. Palliative care is about guiding them through this tough journey with as much peace and support as possible.
Shifting from cure to care, quantity to quality. Now, before we move on, I want to leave you with a question. We've talked about medications, procedures, assessments, all that technical stuff. But beyond those things, how can we as nurses support the emotional and psychological well-being of our patients living with these chronic respiratory conditions?
That's a fantastic question. It really gets to the heart of what nursing is all about. We need to remember that behind every diagnosis, there's a person with their own fears, hopes, and a story.
It's about seeing the whole person, not just the disease.
Exactly. Listen attentively. Offer words of encouragement. Just be there with them through their struggles. Sometimes a warm hand, a listening ear, and a compassionate heart are the most powerful interventions we have.
Those small gestures of kindness can truly make all the difference. Well, we've reached the end of this part of our deep dive. I hope you're feeling a bit more confident and a lot more inspired to face the challenges and rewards of this incredible profession.
I agree. Remember, you're starting an incredible journey, one full of learning, growing, and having the privilege of making a real difference in your patients' lives.
And on that note, we'll be back soon to continue our deep dive. Keep learning, future nurses. Welcome back to the deep dive. We've covered a ton of info about respiratory conditions, but before we wrap up, I want to focus on you, the nursing student, still learning all of this.
It is a lot to take in, right? I remember those days feeling like I was drowning in information.
Exactly. Any advice for our listeners on how to make sense of it all without getting totally overwhelmed?
Well, I think the key is to shift your focus from just memorizing everything to really understanding it.
Okay.
Don't get bogged down trying to remember every single medication dose or lab value. focus on the core concepts, the why behind each condition.
So it's about understanding the pathophysiology, the underlying mechanisms of the disease. Because once you get that, the treatments and interventions start to make more sense.
Exactly. It's like building a house. You need a solid foundation before you can add the walls and the roof.
That's a great analogy. So focus on that foundation. The why and the how will follow. What else can nursing students do to really solidify their understanding of respiratory care?
Don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah, good point.
Your professors, your clinical instructors, even experienced nurses on the floor, they're all valuable resources. They've been where you are now.
So true. I remember feeling intimidated to ask stupid questions, but everyone was so supportive. Now, thinking back to my clinical rotations, I remember those first patient assessments being pretty nerve-wracking. Any tips for our listeners on how to really nail those respiratory assessments?
Take your time. Be systematic. Use all your senses. Don't just rely on what the monitor says.
Right.
Really look at your patient. Are they using those accessory muscles to breathe? What's their skin color like? Are they sweating?
It's about picking up on those subtle cues that could tell you so much. And of course, listening to those lungs is crucial.
Absolutely. Don't rush through it. Listen carefully to each lung field. Compare side to side. What kinds of breath sounds are you hearing? Crackles, wheezes, raunchy. Where are they located?
It's like being a detective, right?
Yeah.
Listening for those clues. And of course, we can't forget about the patient's perspective.
Oh, for sure. Don't underestimate the power of just asking your patient how they're feeling. What are they most worried about? What's been helping or making their breathing worse?
It's about hearing their story, understanding their experience. Now, as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a final thought. We've talked a lot about the technical stuff, but nursing is so much more than that.
Couldn't agree more.
It's about that human connection, that compassionate care that goes beyond just treating symptoms.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that behind every diagnosis, there's a person with their own fears and hopes.
It's about seeing the whole person, not just the disease.
Right. Holding their hand, offering a reassuring smile, letting them know you're there for them every step of the way.
It's those small acts of kindness, those moments of human connection that can make all the difference. So as you continue on your nursing journey, remember that you're not just learning about diseases and treatments. You're learning how to care for people, how to ease their suffering, how to be a beacon of hope.
Beautifully said. You're entering an amazing profession, one with endless opportunities to learn, grow, and make a real difference.
And on that note, we're signing off. Keep diving deep, future nurses, and never stop learning.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've talked about all kinds of respiratory conditions, but before we wrap things up, I want to shift gears a bit.
Okay.
You know, we've covered a lot of ground, from asthma and bronchiectasis to COPD, cystic fibrosis, and even status asthmaticus.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's clear that respiratory conditions are, well, they're a pretty big part of what nurses deal with, right?
Absolutely they are. And it can be a little overwhelming for nursing students just starting out. Exactly. So any words of wisdom for our listeners who are still learning all of this? How can they make sense of it all without feeling like they're drowning in information?
Well, I remember those days, that feeling of information overload. I think one of the best things you can do is to, well, shift your focus a bit.
What do you mean?
Move away from just trying to memorize every single detail, you know, that like every medication dose or lab value. Instead, try to really understand those core concepts, the why behind each condition.
So it's about understanding the pathophysiology, the underlying mechanisms of the disease. Because once you get that, the treatments and interventions start to make more sense.
Exactly. It's like making a house. You need that solid foundation before you start putting up walls and a roof.
Oh, I like that analogy.
All right.
So focus on the foundation, the why, and the how will come naturally.
Right. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Your professors, your clinical instructors, nurses you work with, they're all amazing resources. That's so true. I remember feeling intimidated to ask questions sometimes, thinking they might sound silly, but everyone was so helpful.
Yeah, exactly. We've all been there.
Now, thinking back to my clinical rotations, I remember those initial patient assessments being a little nerve-wracking, especially with respiratory conditions. Any tips for our listeners on how to really nail those assessments?
Take your time. Be systematic and use all your senses. Don't just rely on the numbers you see on the monitor.
Right, the whole picture.
Really look at your patient. Are they using those accessory muscles to breathe? What's their skin color like? Are they sweating? Those are all important clues.
It's about observing those subtle cues that can tell you so much about what's going on. And of course, listening to their lungs is absolutely crucial.
Oh, absolutely. Don't just rush through it. Take your time, listen carefully to each lung field, compare side to side. What kind of breath sounds are you hearing? Are there crackles, wheezes, raunchy? And where are those sounds located? It's like being a detective, right?
Right.
Listening for those clues that help you solve the puzzle of what's happening with their breathing.
Exactly. And don't forget to ask your patient how they're feeling. What are their biggest concerns? What's been helping or making their breathing worse?
That's so important. Their perspective is invaluable.
Right.
Well, as we wrap up this deep dive into the world of respiratory care, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought.
Mm.
We've talked about the medications, the procedures, the assessments, all those technical aspects of care.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, nursing is about so much more than that. It's about remembering that behind every diagnosis, there's a person who's probably scared, maybe frustrated, and possibly feeling a bit lost.
Exactly. It's about that human connection, that compassionate care that goes beyond just treating the physical symptoms. It's about holding their hand, offering a reassuring smile, and letting them know that you're there for them every step of the way.
It's those small acts of kindness, those moments of genuine human connection that can make all the difference. So as you continue on your nursing journey, remember, you're not just learning about diseases and treatments.
Yeah.
You're learning how to care for people, how to ease their suffering, how to be a beacon of hope.
That's beautifully said.
And never forget that you're entering an incredible profession, one that offers endless opportunities to learn, grow, and make a truly profound impact on the lives of others. So on that note, we're signing off. Keep diving deep, future nurses, and never stop learning.